I see this group of people who are beautiful, who have all sorts of wealth. They have financial networks, resources, fame, and yet it appears all they're doing is bitching, and it's never enough. And I gotta tell you, at that moment, it hit me like a ball peen hammer. It's like, holy shit, I have been measuring success in a very similar way to the Kardashians, and I did not feel good about myself. That was a very dark place. I left that, and then I started watching these other shows about these trappers in Alaska who live on $10,000 a year, and it's harsh conditions and cabins they make, and it's just brutal. But yet, not one of these people could go through an episode without saying how grateful they felt, how filled with gratitude for the life they were living. And I realized that I had completely lost control of that narrative.
So welcome back to the Better Than Rich Show. Today, you're in for another treat with Christopher Kluver. And Chris, you might know him from his work. He is the best-selling author of The Aspiring Solopreneur and also the Life on Your Terms series. This conversation is pretty awesome. We get into stabilize, visualize, strategize, and execute. We also get into how you don't have to go to college and then automatically become a Harvard Business School alumnus and a fellow at York University. He talks a little bit about his hack and how social capital can help open up doors for you. It was a really cool conversation that I think you'll really enjoy. He brings a lot of value through his personalized stories that he shares some really specific strategies that I think you're really going to enjoy as well. And then he has a really cool offer at the end about one of his courses that you can get access to. So get ready for another great episode of the Better Than Rich Show with Christopher Kluver.
Welcome to the Better Than Rich Show with your hosts, Andrew Biggs and Mike Abramowitz. The Better Than Rich Show helps ambitious leaders who are on a mission to leave the world better than they found it, change their perspective on what's important, increase their income and impact, and systemize their life and business. If you've ever struggled with finding your purpose, have felt disconnected or distracted, or found yourself going through the motions, this show will remind you that what you do matters and will re-inspire you to chase your highest dreams. It's time for you to become better than rich.
Welcome back to the Better Than Rich Show. I am Mike Abramowitz, and I am here with Chris Kluver. Welcome to the Better Than Rich Show, brother.
Hey, right on, man. Thank you so much for having me. I'm humbled.
Well, this is going to be a great convo. And for everybody that just heard your bio, I'm sure they're really looking forward to this conversation too. And I like to go right into some tactical, practical for when I have someone of your experience and expertise, we're going to go right in. So you launched 15 companies since 19. And right now, I mean, you have over 30 years of experience, unbelievable lifestyle. And I want to make sure we capture some of that lifestyle stuff today. But I want to start with boundaries, because one of the things that we talk about with our Time Rich Six is boundaries, communication guidelines, systems, playbooks, team, and tech. And the number one being boundaries. Can you riff for a moment of what were the boundaries that you had for yourself when you were 19 years old starting that first company? And as you were kind of climbing up the rankings as like a newer entrepreneur compared to where you're at now with what are the boundaries around your life? Meaning, what are the things that you're protecting most to you? How do you want people to communicate with you within those boundaries? What's allowed? What's tolerable? What's not? How did you allow interruptions to come into your life back then compared to now? I'd love to just hear you riff on that. Then we can kind of go in whatever direction makes sense from there.
All right, cool. Well, at 19, if I had a shot, I'd be like, okay, yeah, great, good. Okay, yes, I can do it. Even if I had no clue what I was doing, I would accept and do anything just to keep the work going. And it was because I didn't know any better. And it was more of a survivalist, scarcity mindset approach. And I think as I've gotten older, I'm in my mid-50s now, having more of that abundance mindset. And that empowers me, and I can give myself permission to say no more. One of the biggest challenges I have when I'm working with really, really successful people, and I work with a fair number of ultra high net worth people and mid-market companies, is that just because you can doesn't mean you should. And the creation of boundaries is typically uncomfortable. But a quote from Buffett that I love that says, successful people are good at saying no. Really, really, really successful people are really, really, really good at saying no. So establishing those parameters of what success and what it looks like for you, but it's the 6 inches that gets in the way more than anything as far as our ability to step back and say, no, it's okay to say no, and giving ourselves permission, but understanding that a lot of times that's uncomfortable, but we don't grow in comfort. We only grow in discomfort.
This is good. And obviously, when we're saying no to one thing, we're saying yes to something else. So when you're like saying, I'm saying no to all this other stuff, whatever that stuff is, what you're really doing is you're saying yes to the priorities. How do you take an ultra high net worth person or anyone in general or yourself to figure out what are my priorities? What are some like exercises or prompts or some things to say, these are my priorities that I want to say yes to. So therefore, anything that's not on this list, I say no to. Do you have some sort of activity or exercise that you like to walk through for that clarity?
Well, there's a few different tools. And like, I got to say, I love what you guys do as far as offering virtual assistants and people like that. I have a whole team of people that I delegate to, and understanding what is our highest and best use comes down to what are the things that we really love doing that we're great at, but are also going to generate and be the highest dollar generating that we can be. So there's a variety of tools. And I see you've got a book in the back there called Traction, but there's an exercise in there called the Elevate and Delegate exercise that you use. It's a 2x2 matrix that has four segments. Top left is stuff you love and you're great at. Top right is stuff you like and you're good at. Bottom left is stuff that's okay or you're okay at, or you like it, you're good at it, but you don't really like it. And then the bottom right is kind of stuff that you hate and you suck at. If somebody just goes through over the course of a couple of days and lists those things out, that alone creates an awareness. And a lot of times how often we're giving away a lot of time in transition because we're not managing our time well. But then if people put those things in there, they can start to see that in that bottom right corner, if they're investing any time in stuff that they hate and they stink at, well, candidly, they're stealing from that top left quadrant that they're really, really good at. And that's where they should be investing their time. So I'm very dyslexic with numbers, especially, but I still have six companies. So for me, if you want me to fill out a government form, my eyes bleed and I'm 80% chance I'm going to screw it up. But my bookkeepers and accountants love that stuff. So I can delegate those out and I can elevate to what's my highest and best use. And that's where having the tools like my assistant has virtual assistants, because we can keep doing that. And how do we keep elevating people to whatever their highest and gifted use is?
And what would you say to someone maybe that has a scarcity play that's like, wow, that's good for you. You know, you have multiple assistants, because I'm with you. I have 14 assistants working for me right now that are, most of them are acting as me, doing work for me, but it's just not by me. That's the art of delegation. But someone has a scarcity play that says, well, you know, I don't know. They would take me so much time to like teach these people how to do something. I might as well just do it myself. Or if they're not doing things that necessarily directly make me money, then it essentially, yes, it gives me time back, but I don't want to spend money to make money, or just that scarcity type of mentality that sometimes people have where they're holding a little bit too tight onto the reins because nobody else can do something as good as them. What would you say to that person?
Well, when I see that, that's usually a fear-based component. It's coming out of fear, and usually it's an outcome bias, meaning that somebody's tried it in the past and it didn't work well. And they said, well, yeah, I tried that. So that turned into a train wreck. So I'm never doing that again. But the reality is there was probably something else that bit them in the ass. Maybe it was the wrong person. Maybe they didn't do the training correctly. Maybe the timing was off. It could be a variety of reasons of why something happens. So with that, first, getting the person to understand that they need to be reflective of that and consider that maybe the past wasn't the right outcome. Maybe it was the right decision, but the wrong outcome. So they have more of an outcome bias. The other thing I talk a lot about is there's only three things on the planet we can leverage: our time, our talent, and our treasure. Our treasure being our money and our stuff. And that's the one that we all focus on because it's the easiest metric and tangible metric we can track. We can invest money and we can put a return. What is my ROI on that? Fair enough. Now, the reality, though, is that it's the least real and the most fictitious because we can beg, borrow, steal it, disappear, come back. That's one that's very, very elastic. Our talent are our skills. And when I talk about our skills, this is how can we constantly be sharpening the saw? And when we can delegate crappy, boring stuff away and actually invest in ourselves, getting smarter, we're going to get stronger. We're going to become a better asset to our organization. But it's time, without any doubt, that is our most valuable asset for the simple reason that it disappears every second. So like, I ban the words spending time or wasting time. I only invest my time. And when you start to transition your thinking on how am I choosing to invest my time? I chose to spend 3 hours in the woods skiing yesterday in the backcountry because it was the highest and best use of my time to invest those 3 hours doing that. And I think that that starts to help transition that mindset from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset, when you say, all right, it's limited bandwidth, where is my highest and best use and how do I choose to invest that? But what do you think?
When I asked you the question and then hearing your response, it triggered a question that was asked to me yesterday. I was a guest on, I think it's like the Self Fearless podcast with Joie. It's a really cool conversation that will be released anyway somewhere else. But she asked me a question I'm going to ask you, but not that I don't want to answer the question, but I don't want to lose this thread. She said, okay, there's a lot of dads, because I'm in a group called Front Row Dads, and I'm really passionate about it. A great group of dudes. The whole mantra is family men with businesses, not businessmen with families. And a lot of the disillusionment that a lot of men typically come into, it's like, well, my worth in this household is to make money. So therefore, I make money so we can have more freedom and all the things that we need to do as a family. So what happens is she asked me the question of like, the guy feels like he can't be a successful family person if he's not making a lot of money. So what is your thoughts on that? That's what she asked me. So my question for you, I want to almost like see your framework here. I mean, you're a married man. You and your wife have created, it looks like, a beautiful life with you and Rika from the outside looking in that we'll talk about. But what would you say to that business owner? Now, no, we're talking to a man, but it doesn't have to be a man right now. It could be a mom, it could be a dad, it doesn't matter, husband or wife, but somebody who says, my self-worth is tied to that net worth that I'm bringing into the home so we could have the freedom and the options that we have. Do you call bullshit on that? Do you say there's some little bit of truth to that? Or what would you say to this person that that's their only value to their family is, yeah, great, you don't want my time. You don't want me to just sit here and just give you time. You actually want my money and I need to go be making money if you want to have the nice stuff that you're used to having.
I don't only call bullshit on it, I call it total fucking bullshit.
Thank you.
That's somebody's own head trash. That's what they're wearing, not anybody else. Or now, sometimes, if they do, I would question the relationship they're in. Now, don't get me wrong. I love having multiple homes and my BMWs and my fancy. I love that shit. But that's not the primary driver. And I have worked with people who are literally unicorn billionaires, who are miserable bastards, because all they did was focus on the business and the money. And candidly, they get a good exit. Their wives don't like them. Their kids don't like them. They don't like themselves. So I think that that's an excuse where somebody's hiding. So when I'm working with teams, I always, always encourage, particularly if it's a smaller business or if they're in a startup phase, is, and I talk about this in my first book, but the idea is define what your ideal life is first. What does amazing look like for your life? Visualize that. Then there's tools and ways you can do that. And then build your business so that it fits within your life. Most businesses go completely bass-ackwards with that. They go and they build a business, and then they try and make their life fit with the business. And then they get frustrated that they don't have balance. And work-life balance is bullshit. It doesn't exist. But a healthy work-life integration does. And when you can put that intentionality to that, when you can delegate stuff away, when you can take time to invest and breathe and realize you're the primary asset and drive a vision of where you want to go, it becomes simpler. But investing that time and energy and having the guts to do that. I actually work with a bunch of women CEOs. Candidly, if you're a woman, there's an additional pressure, societal pressure, to be a great mom and to be a successful business owner and to be driving. And there's some truth to that, unfortunately, still. But it's starting to get unwound.
So your responses are triggering some questions and more additional curiosity. And by the way, I love that response. I think it is absolutely correct. We had Corey Carlson on the show and went at home first, and he talked about head trash. There was a whole conversation we had about that. You're spot on there. Where I get curious is that head trash, or also known as the shadows. We had Connor Beaton on the show talk about men's work and these shadows that sometimes come up from our past. You specifically, Chris, I mean, you're a high earner, you're coaching high earners, you have lived what seems like, again, a beautiful life that we can unpack a little bit. Were there points while you were building some of these businesses, some of those shadows, those insecurities, those dark places that you had to navigate through for yourself were kind of being exposed, where you were trying to have the persona of, I have all my stuff together, but yet deep down, I have these deeper insecurities? And did you like work through those deeper insecurities at some point in order for you to find your full authentic self so you can help pull that out of other people. I'm projecting my own story, obviously, from the question because I know the answer for me is yes. And I know a lot of our guests, it's yes. So I'm assuming it's a yes, but I'm asking in a question without the assumptive phrase there. But I'd love to just try to draw that out of you because a lot of times those that are in your seat have typically gone through some sort of valley or some sort of shadow and have done some of that deep work behind the scenes, behind closed doors, in order to be able to help those in the public space, whatever direction you want to go with that.
Okay. So roughly 9 years ago, I had a couple companies, was doing fairly well, but I was on the treadmill, man. I was chasing it all the time. And through sins of my youth, I ended up needing to get my hip and my knee replaced. And there was a point where I was stuck on the couch, literally immobile, baked out of my gourd on oxy. I couldn't read, couldn't do anything, couldn't physically move as I recovered. And I started watching daytime TV. This is a very scary place because I am used to running at a million miles an hour with my hair on fire and really enjoying myself. But going through, I discovered what a Kardashian was. And I didn't know what that was. So I'm watching this. And as I watch, I see this group of people who are beautiful, who have all sorts of wealth. They have financial networks, resources, fame. And yet it appears all they're doing is bitching. And it's never enough. And I got to tell you, at that moment, it hit me like a ball peen hammer. It's like, holy shit, I have been measuring success in a very similar way to the Kardashians. And I did not feel good about myself. That was a very dark place. I left that and then I started watching these other shows about these trappers in Alaska who live on $10,000 a year and it's harsh conditions and cabins they make and it's just brutal. But yet not one of these people could go through an episode without saying how grateful they felt, how filled with gratitude for the life they were living. And I realized that I had completely lost control of that narrative of success. I had completely given it away to the scarcity mindsets of the social platforms, in some cases, my peers, in some cases, even, you know, my parents and things like that. So that to me was what really started me going down the rabbit hole of creating the different courses and a couple of the books was to help on that because it was my own journey realizing that I needed to look way outside the box and redefine what success is, but more on a holistic level. But the beautiful thing is that when you do this and when you treat yourself like the primary asset, everything else expands. To where when you become the very best dad or husband, when you become physically fit in your spiritual, your mental, and your physical state, you actually become a better leader. And when you become a better leader, you actually make more money, which is counterintuitive instead of, well, I just got to stay focused on the business. So I rambled a little bit there, but I fully agree with you that you have to be able to redefine it though and look at it on your terms.
We had an episode that my business partner and I did a while back on the life cycle of a man. And what we talked about, and this is Alison Armstrong's work in the episode, is the tunnel. And the tunnel is like the dark place where the knight has been slaying all the dragons in the achievement world. And then they get to the dark tunnel. And on the other end of the tunnel is becoming a prince. And sometimes they get so scared in that tunnel that they just like say, screw this. This is a dark, scary place. I'm just going to settle and be a lord. The prince's goal is to eventually become a king. And the lord is just like, I'm just going to be content with life and just, you know, settle because I don't want to go through the rest of that tunnel. It's just too dark and scary. And what I heard what you just said is, I'm sitting on the couch. I have money. I have a lot of things that, you know, people might deem success, but there was like this feeling inside of me to say, wow, I feel like I was playing the wrong game. The scoreboard, at least the scoreboard of the game that I was playing, was actually correct. The way that I feel most aligned on how to keep score. So instead of scoring points with cool shit, it's like, how do I score points with fulfillment and with more of the higher frequency of energetics that bring me more value and bring value to the marketplace, but also to myself, those around me. I resonate with that. I receive that. And I hope you as the listener also was able to gather that from what Chris said too. My follow-up might be, if there was any... I try to get into tactical a little bit, but like if there was a tactical strategy that someone might be able to do, like other than sitting there watching the Kardashians compared to watching this TV, because it's actually interesting. Like I do that. Like I'll watch The Profit. I watch Shark Tank. I watch these based on true stories to draw out these inspiration from me. And then from that place of inspiration, I can execute. So that in itself is a strategy. Do you feel like there's other strategies that you can help someone with to try to draw out their true self, that best version of them, so they could show up as who they're called to be without having to be on the couch laid up for a few months or whatnot?
I do. And I invest a lot of time in working with people on this. But I feel like every organization, leadership team, CEO, individual, and even couples is going through one of four phases. And those four phases is stabilize, visualize, strategize, or execute. If I want to talk to somebody about creating a strategy, but they're running around with their hair on fire, it's going to go in one ear and out the other. If they don't have a clear visualization of where they're going, and most of us don't, most of us live life by reacting through life the entire time, rather than defining where it is we want to go. So to me, one of the things that I always start people with is, and I'll tell this at the end of the show, there's a tool that people can have and they go download it for free. But if people can start to visualize what a holistic, amazing life looks like in their resources, their time, their talent, their treasure, in their relationships, with their partner, their family, their friends, in their health, physical, mental, and spiritual, and then in the professional life, environmental, comp, and job satisfaction. But if they can visualize on a holistic level and actually document, where do I want my life to look like a year from now? From your health to your relationships with your family, kids, things like to your resources, and actually just document that. But it starts putting a destination on where you want to go. It's that fully integrated life of where you want to go and how to do that. But if you can start with that visualization component and then start backing into, so first we stabilize, get some breathing room, do the assessment, understand where we are, visualize where we want to go, then start creating a strategy of how is it you want to go and achieve it. And then how do you hold yourself ruthlessly, but compassionately accountable so that you make those things become a reality?
Just a little pushback. Chris, I'm such in the funk right now, Chris. I'm in a winter season. The only thing I want, you're asking me to visualize what I want. I want to get the fuck out of this debt, or man, I want to get out of the trenches. I can't think about the peak. I just want to get out of the shit right now, out of the valley. And then, once I'm out of the valley, I'll think about what the peak is. What would you say to someone that's just so stuck and like, I can't figure out what I want? Do you direct them to say, well, what are all the things that you don't want? And let's work to avoid that, like the pursuit of pleasure versus the avoidance of pain? Or do you take them through a different strategy or a different technique to kind of get them acclimated or focused on the wants in a different way if they're a little stuck on that?
So when I have somebody who's really stuck, their reality is their reality. And my job is to be curious and meet them where they're at, but also be fearless in how to challenge it. It's my opinion that if they can start with some small victories and get something going in the right direction. So to me, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. So it's like, all right, dude, you're not happy with your finances. All right, well, you know what? Suck it up, buttercup. That's self-inflicted. What are you going to do about it? What's one thing you can do today? And if it means that you don't have a latte, fair enough. You just save $5. If it means that you start looking at those things in a different way. But part of it is you need to be accountable. And you say, all right, well, visualize then. Start with the financial visualization. Where do you want to be in a year? Well, I want to be out of debt. Cool. How are you going to do that? And then start breaking it down. But it's setting that goal. Most people, even in their businesses, they grow through reaction. Oh, I could do this. So I go over here. Oh, this is possible. Oh, somebody knows this person. They don't say, I want to go here. When you say, I want to go to this point, whether it's having a better relationship, whether it's getting out of financial debt, whether it's tripling your income. There's a great quote from Henry Ford that whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you're right. But you've got to plant the flag and then start backing into it and say how you're going to do it. But like I say, though, most people end up in a job because somebody knew somebody, or my dad knew this person, or I got a referral there, or I was good at it, but I didn't like it. They don't really figure out what they fucking want. And if we don't know that, then we're just going to keep reacting. So if somebody's in that negative spot, how can they find some sort of arbitrage of time? In some cases, as silly as it is, I'll have people make sure that they don't have their cell phone in the room at night when they sleep. Because when they start getting a little bit better rest, if they can get one extra hour of sleep a night, then suddenly the world looks different. If they can tactically put those things away, start figuring out what's one way I can save $10 a day and just start there. But what are those small victories? Because then we build on them.
Yeah, that's great. We talk about them as TADS, Tiny Actions Daily, TADS. That's like an acronym that I created and it works really well. So I love that response. Is there anything else you want to hit on? Because I'm going to take a complete pivot in a different direction. Is there anything else under that umbrella that you're like, all right, I didn't say that, but I really kind of want to before I go in a different direction?
just high level, people ask each other, hey, how you doing? And people ask me, it's like, how you doing, man? It's like, I feel like the luckiest cat on the planet. And people are like, oh, you're being flippant. It's like, no, I'm not. I really genuinely believe I'm the luckiest person on the planet. I think the universe is in alignment to give me everything I want. I just have to be clear on what it is. But I think we are all in the same boat. Every one of us. I think every one of us can be the luckiest cat on the planet, but we have to be clear in what we're looking for and what we're attracting and what we're driving to. And that's where, when you define it on a holistic level, you want to get all your time back? Fucking A, get all your time back. You want to live life in an extraordinary way? Fantastic. Visualize it and then build that strategy and then hold yourself ruthlessly, consistently accountable.
My wife might challenge you. She thinks I'm the luckiest cat on the planet. So like little thing, I'm talking like, we'll go to a parking garage and I'll be like, hey, how much is the free parking today? You know, it'd be like $20. You know, how much is the free parking today? Like, just go ahead. She's like, what the hell? How'd you do that? I'm like, sometimes you just ask, you know. But
it's true.
So here's the little pivot. I wanted to kind of peel back a little bit of this layer where you said you started your first business at 19, but you were also in Harvard Business School along with being a fellow at York University. I'd like to know a little bit about that origin story, because it's not every day you have that we have a guest in the show who has that type of prominent educational background while also having like high-level business success early on. I'd love to just have you peel back just the layers of that origin. Was there an overlap? Like, you're like pursuing Harvard type of education while also starting these companies where you're like Mark Zuckerberg over here? Like, I mean, that's where my mind went to, like, wow, this guy kind of was building stuff while he was also pursuing that education. Just whatever direction you want to go to capture that origin story. But I would just love for you to unpack that, because it seems super impressive when I just read it in your bio. It just has my curiosity piqued just to hear a little bit more context there.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to burst your bubble then, because
please,
it wasn't that way at all. But no, I have a degree in home economics from the prestigious University of Wyoming, where at one point the lowest GPA I had was 0.5 because I was partying and chasing girls and skiing too much. But for me, it's been all about business and entrepreneurship. And when I started as an entrepreneur in the 90s, early 90s, entrepreneurship was a dirty word. It was pretty much meant that you weren't ever going to be able to get into corporate. And I chose to go that route and I was cool with it and it worked out. But it's been through that one of my core values is always curious and always learning. I always want to be getting smarter. I try and invest about 20% of my effort, my energy in sharpening the saw and getting smarter with what I do. And with that, that's led to a variety of different things where I got the opportunity to do an executive course at Harvard Business School, which was really fun. It was great. It was with 98 entrepreneurs. And it was, there was one, just a side story there. We're sitting there at Harvard and they bring in the very best high-end professors to do this course. And one of these courses, you know, he'd been on the cover of Forbes magazine with Steve Jobs and things like this. And he goes, he's sitting back and he's like, okay, I want you guys to write this down. And he was started writing something on the board and he didn't hear anything. He turned around. He's like, oh, you guys are all owners. He goes, if you guys were in my MBA class, you guys would be like, oh, yes, sir, right away. And you'd be getting your pens and papers out. You guys are like, yeah, whatever, big guy, show me. And then I'll write it down if I want to. But it was a different spin on that. But it was through that. And then the York piece, it's a long story, but it actually came through some hiking that I was doing over in Italy in the Dolomites. Got to meet some people, was giving away, helping people. Fearlessly giving first for the betterment of others is another one of my values. And it just worked out that I ended up tripping into some opportunities to start working there. And then I got invited in to be a fellow at York.
So if I understood that right, so this education, the prestige high level education came a little bit later in life. It wasn't like the traditional route of I go to high school, I go to this prestigious university, I get my degree, I accumulate a lot of debt, and then I try to work the next chapter of my life to pay off all that debt. So it wasn't that like traditional route.
No, and I will catch hell, but I think that that's a shitty route to go unless you want to be a mechanic or a technician. If you want to work for Bain or McKinsey or Goldman, fancier schools just create fancier, bigger cogs where you make more money. That's it. I chose to go the other way where I built what I wanted. And then I chose, where do I want to go to school? What do I want to learn? And what are the opportunities there? But it was specifically had nothing to do with a degree or any of those things. It's more around what can I learn and what can I get from them? So, because I think, unfortunately, I think our educational system's broken in a lot of ways. The perceived trade-off isn't worth it anymore.
Yeah, we've had many of those conversations on this show for sure. My business partner, Andrew, he has his degree in piano performance, and he is an expert piano. It's unbelievable. And then I have my industrial engineering degree. So we both have our degrees. We both accumulated a lot of expenses through college. However, we are not necessarily using those degrees to necessarily make us money. And the cost of education is just astronomical these days compared to even just where it was 20 years ago. So I have my own bias on that too. And we've had conversations on the show around it. But what I really love about what you said is, if I'm a parent, which I am, and I hear that, I feel like I might take that clip and share that with my son and my daughter. Like, James is only 3 and my daughter Ella was just born, but I don't know what the education system is going to be like when they're ready for it. But like, hey, there's another route. There's like options C, D, E, and F. It's not like A, go to high school, go to college, that's it. B, go to high school, go to the military. C, drop out and you're a failure. It's like, you know, there is like other options that you could start a business and then go to school later and go learn what you want once you have options and choices. And I really love that. Can you give just maybe a small little bit of coloring to when you say 20% of your energy and resources, or however you said it, is dedicated to learning? Is that like podcast reading, or is it specific traditional classroom education or variety mastermind groups or mentorship? Would you say that? What do you actually mean by the 20% towards learning?
Okay. Well, I try and time block out at least 15 hours a week of quiet thinking time. A lot of time that's me alone in the woods. We live at 10,000 feet and I consume a lot of books on Audible. So I've done that. 2 weeks ago, we finished a 4-day advanced avalanche training course, which has nothing to do with business, but I was amazed how much it did have to do with business as far as teams and communication and trust and challenging people. A month and a half ago, I finished a course to become a certified strategic exit advisor for companies, mid-level market companies that are looking for strategic exits, to learn that. So for me, it's different areas of that I'm finding interesting and making sure that I invest the time. I sort of steal that from the idea that I think it's Buffett, Zuckerberg, Cuban, Gates, all are known to invest anywhere from 3 to 8 hours a day reading, where they're always sharpening the saws. And I think that I aspire to do even more as I get time down the road to focus on that.
Something we did not hit on that you just mentioned, I want to make sure we capture in this episode, is the exits. We had recently on the show Nathan Hirsch, who had started a company with $5,000 and then just had a $12 million exit within 4 years of starting. So it was a really cool conversation. He's awesome. We just had him on the show. I'd love for you to just kind of riff on that just a little bit. We also had Kasim Aslam, who is Solutions 8, had an 8-figure exit recently as well. What was your most notable 8-figure exit, or several, whatever stories you want to share there, that can have the listener not only kind of enter into your world for a moment, but just potentially get inspired by what it means to build a company where you can either build a company or buy a company where you can have an 8-figure exit? I'm sure that's a lot to unpack there, but whatever story that feels most compelling for you to share, and any tactical or strategy or tools or things that you can share, that obviously is like a whole course in itself, but just to kind of go in whatever direction you feel compelled to share, that would be awesome. I'm super interested.
So I've had the good fortune to work with 4 companies, and I'm working with 3 now, but the 4 have gone from entrepreneurial to billion-dollar market caps, literally millions to almost billion-dollar valuations. And the biggest challenge is understanding that the skills it takes to go from here to here are different than the skills it takes to go from here to here. What got you where you are isn't going to get you where you need to go. It's a lot of it comes down to mindset, and it really applies to what you do in making sure that you can delegate. And it's a willingness to be comfortable. But it really starts with having a crystal clear vision of where you want to go and what success looks like. Making sure that you dream and be audacious. I've had people pull me aside in the middle of a full-day strategic session and chew my ass out for pushing them too hard and saying, well, there's no way we're ever going to hit that. And then call me crying the last week of the year going, holy shit, we did it. So it really comes down, though, to thinking of what it is. And I know you asked at the end on books, spoiler alert, the one that I think is great is by Dan Sullivan called 10X is Easier Than 2X. It's a really simple one, but it's a great way of looking and leveraging at things in a different way. And in essence, when you dream audaciously and you dream really, really big, well, it's a much narrower road to get there. But what it does is it becomes a forcing device for you to let go of a lot of the noise and get out of the way of a lot of other shit. To grow 20%, most people say, yeah, we want to grow 20% next year. We want to grow 15% next year. The reality is they can cop out and just put in 20% more cycles. They can just work a little bit harder. But eventually you burn out on that. But if you say, no, I want to completely change how this goes, holy shit, you're going to have to step back and really think about it. And it's going to be a forcing device to say, we don't have time to look at this other stuff. We don't have time to keep dicking with all this little stuff. We've got to figure out these priorities to drive to those bigger areas. But it also helps people transition. And like with the mid-market companies, the $50 to billion dollar companies that I'm working with, getting the CEOs to transition away from being doers to thinkers, to being execution, to being more teachers, facilitators, and coaches is one of the biggest challenges. But when they start to do that, then people really start to hit the gas. Does that make sense?
What I heard there is think differently about time. I heard that. I also heard surround yourself around who's. When you said 10x is easier than 2x, I love Dan Sullivan's work. I got Who Not How, Gap in the Gain.
Yeah.
That's a great book. The 10x is easier than 2x as well. The idea that we can create whatever it is that we want to create, but we have to know what we want to create first, I think is sometimes a stuck point for some people that listen because they're like, I've always done it this way. And this is how like people before me have done it. This is what's familiar. And it's sometimes like a little scary to change. And it's also unpredictable. There's uncertainty. Do you have any counsel on how to create predictability within that unpredictability?
Where my head goes is it's about cycles and trusting yourself. But if everybody else has always done it that way, then you're going to get the same results. If you've always done it that way, you're going to get the same results. If you genuinely want to change and get to a different level, you're going to have to start doing things differently. But remember, and competence empowers confidence. So when you first start doing this, yeah, maybe it's uncomfortable. But if you go through and you do it anyway, and it works, or you learn from it, and maybe it ends up in a different spot than you thought, but you got stronger. It's through those cycles that as you do that, you become more competent. So as an example, I've got probably 10,000 hours of facilitation and coaching under my belt or more. I used to think that I had to have the answer because people pay me a lot of money. I had to have the answer for everything. But the more I lean into saying, I don't know, but I'm confident we'll figure it out, that actually builds more trust with people. But it took a long time for me to say, I don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I don't have to know the answers to everything. And I do have to have the confidence, though, that I know we're going to be able to find the path to figure it out.
I love that response of let's find out. I think that's a really, really great response. It's what my first business coach, now business partner, asked me when we were building out systems for my direct sales office. It was like, is there really a way for us to systemize direct sales where I could remove myself as the bottleneck? He's like, let's find out. And I think it's a really appropriate question because he helped scale a company in India from 6 million to 30 million and had a staff of 1,400 underneath him. And I'm like, I'm a solopreneur over here with a couple of college kids as my staff, this hodgepodge group. I was like, can I really corporatize this thing? He's like, let's find out. From that lens, we were able to do it. We were able to buy back time. We were able to create a tremendous increase in revenue and profits. And that's like our origin story of what we do. But from that place of curiosity and willingness to learn and willingness to go into the unpredictable and try to create as much predictable outcomes as possible, focus on what's in my control. Like, I think these are great responses, Chris. Is there anything else that we didn't hit on today that you want to hit on before we go into our final three questions and then give people an opportunity to learn a little bit more about you and your courses?
Just that it is possible. My wife and I take about 2 months off a year doing adventure travel. I live at 10,000 feet looking at the tallest mountain in Colorado. I work with people that I want to work with when I want to work with them. I'm having an impact and driving it. But none of this happened by accident. It was all clear intention on where we wanted to go and how we wanted to achieve it. And when you look at life on a holistic, integrated way, and when you dare to be audacious, anything's possible. And it has never been easier to start a business. It has never been easier to delegate things away. It has never been easier to achieve our dreams, but it's the 6 inches between our ears that gets in the way more than anything.
That's great. I'm glad you went there because I forgot to ask you about how awesome your lifestyle is. So I'm glad you captured that a little bit for us. I'm a huge skier. One of my favorite things, grew up in New Jersey, took my dad to Switzerland on a trip, skied Killington, Vermont. We just did a tribe trip to Colorado 2 years ago, went to Vail and Beaver Creek, and love, absolutely love. On the dreams list is to go to Whistler. It's one of the places I haven't been yet, but Matterhorn in Switzerland was my pinnacle goal and was able to check that box a few years back. But absolutely love it. Chris, we like to ask every guest three questions. And the first question we like to ask every guest is, what do you think the world needs most today?
Curiosity. I am embracing, we are so good at pointing and saying you should, from politics to business to all sorts of stuff. Nobody likes to get shit on. So I think if we could say, hey, you know, I don't understand that. Help me understand. If everybody could start just embracing more a spirit of curiosity, and really listen to understand what somebody else's perspective is rather than listening to be right, but trying to understand. If we could have a true spirit of curiosity, I think it'd change the goddamn planet.
It's great. And I know, Chris, you have your books that we'll mention at the end as well, which is The Aspiring Solopreneur. You have the Life on Your Terms series. We also mentioned 10X is greater than 10X is easier than 2X by Tan Sullivan. Is there maybe one or two or three other books that could be helpful for others that are listening?
And what is it? It was on time. And I think it was 2000 Weeks. Nah, shoot, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a great book on time. I may look it up or I can give it to you after. But it talks about the idea that from a perspective, high level, the construct of time is the way we look at it now industrially is a new way of looking at it. Up until just 150, 200 years ago, it was always agrarian time. And we would spend as much time as it took to milk the cow. Nobody said, you've got 12 minutes to milk the cow. But when we started trading time for money, we ended up losing control, and we lose control of managing the time. So we give it away because we're trading the dollars. So now everything is getting pushed all the time. We have all these demands on our time, but it's a different way of looking at it. And then when you fold in on top of it, what's going to happen with AI and the idea that our little lizard brains can only comprehend so much, and AI is only going to be constructed by power, by the amount of bandwidth and power it has. But I think it was something like 2,000 hours maybe.
I just typed into Google top book around time. There's 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals that popped that's up. It. Is that the one? 4,000.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. A little bit of Google search sometimes goes a long way. So 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. Is that it?
Yep. It explains roughly as humans' current life cycle, we have about 4,000 weeks. How do you choose to invest?
Very cool. New book recommended on the show. We appreciate that. Third question, Chris, is what does it mean to you to be better than rich?
I want to make sure that every day I feel I've contributed, that I'm living life on my terms, not according to anybody else's scarcity mindsets. If I feel like I'm living life on my terms and I'm contributing in the ways that are in alignment with my values, then I win. Hands down. Worth so much more than money. Quick. Super, super short story. We didn't have kids, unfortunately, but we took our nieces traveling in different international adventure trips. And we took two of them at 12 down to Guatemala. And we were in a huge 1,000-year-old market. And we saw some very rough, very, very poor people, like on a scooter with no hands, no legs. And you see people poor. And we're sitting in a church courtyard eating some frozen pineapple. And I asked my niece how she was doing. And she said, yeah, I'm doing okay. Now you can tell me. She goes, yeah, the people here though are poor. What do you think about that? She said, they're poor, but the TV isn't very fair to them. What does that mean? She goes, well, they don't have much money. Boy, they sure are happy. So here's a 12-year-old who was getting a perspective that here's some people who were making literally $200 a year, and yet they were happier than people making hundreds of thousands of dollars here. So to see that perspective, to me, that's what success is. That's what life is making sure that you're happy and you're contributing in the ways that fit for you.
Beautiful, beautiful story and a beautiful gift that you're able to give to your niece. I love that. Chris, I'm sure people are going to want to stay in touch with you. I know you have a couple 12,000, 14,000 LinkedIn connections, and I know you have a great platform and lots of resources, courses that people could learn from you. Where would you want to direct them, or where could people stay in touch with you?
Well, I mentioned earlier, there's a website called lifeon-yourterms.com. And about 2/3 of the way down the page, there's a tool called the Balance Wheel. It's free, doesn't cost anything. They're welcome to go in and use that. And it takes about 6 minutes and it'll give them an immediate results that'll come up with whatever their balance wheel looks like. But they can use that as a starting point to start figuring out what does amazing look like. And they can see where they are, celebrate some victories, and see some opportunities for growth and start figuring out how can I move forward? What can I do in the next 12 months to make it better? But they can do that, or they can reach out direct to me at k@entadv.com. First three letters of entrepreneur, first three letters of advisor, k@entadv.com.
All right. We'll definitely put those in the show notes. lifeon-yourterms.com. And I see there's a quiz, there's an assessment there. It seems like some really great content on that page. So thank you for sharing that, Chris. And thank you for your wisdom, your time. I really appreciate your openness and be able to answer any of the questions that came your way. I always trust my intuition with them. And listener, always appreciate you. I know many of you have been going through our rebrand from like Better Than Rich is the podcast, but then you're sending me this thing about Time Rich. What is all this about? So we appreciate you navigating this rebrand with us, but we just felt like our services was called Better Than Rich AI Powered Virtual Assistant Services, which is a little too long. So we took that down. We call it now Time Rich. And underneath Time Rich, we have AI Powered Virtual Assistants. So currently, we are doing free 90-day delegation plans. I'm running all of them right now. So many of you have been booking up my calendar. It's been a lot of fun hopping on with you and plan a lot of what Chris talked about. It's like, hey, we got to get all these things offloaded, those low value tasks. We'll get them offloaded. We'll figure out exactly how to do that. And then if it makes sense for our team, our virtual assistant team, to do the stuff for you, then of course we could tell you a little bit more about our services. But if not, we at least just want to help you get your time freedom. That's what's most important to us. So you can book that call at betterthanrich.com/90-day plan, 90-day plan. So betterthanrich.com/90-day plan. I'd love to have that conversation with you if it makes sense. So again, thanks for supporting the show. And until next week, leave today better than you found it. Have a good one. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram @better_than_rich and join our Facebook group @the Better Than Rich Show. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time. And remember, leave today better than you found it.